You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia tau te rangi marie, o rangi nui e tui honei, o papu tuanuku e takatonei, o te tai ao e awhinei I a tātou, tihei Māori ora.
This is The Green Desk on 95BFM.
The Callaghan Medal is a New Zealand communication award given out annually for outstanding science or technology communication. Last month, it was announced that the award has been given to Dr. Helen Taylor, research fellow at the University of Otago. She was given the award in recognition of her excellent communication and outreach work related to her research in conservation genetics of threatened species. In an interview with Dr. Taylor, Alice started by asking her to explain what conservation genetics even means.
So conservation genetics is one of those things that people often don't put those two words together, conservation and genetics. But genetics is a tool that can be really, really important to conservation. So typically we're using it to look at what happens when populations get very small, how populations used to be connected but might not be anymore, and lots of other questions that we can answer that if you just look at species on the face of things, you can't always tell. But by sampling DNA, and having a look at what's going on in that DNA code, we can answer a bunch of questions that you can't always get at without that data. So genetics is just a tool. It's just one of the tools that we can use to help threatened species, and conservation genetics is the field that aims to do that.
Mm. And what is your research specifically looking at?
So I do look at what happens to populations when they get very small, and I tend to look at that in threatened bird species here in New Zealand. So I worked with little spotted kiwi for my PhD, and I now work with South Island robins and also with hihi or stitch birds. And so I'm looking at when a population gets very small, it tends to lose genetic diversity, which is bad news because that means it can't adapt as well to changing circumstances. And we also tend to see more mating between relatives or inbreeding. And that can cause problems as well, like problems with reproduction, problems with survival. So at the moment, I'm actually looking at how inbreeding might be affecting male fertility in hihi and in South Island robin. So I actually look at their sperm to see what's going on with that in relation to the genetic data that we have for these species.
Has anyone done research like this previously with birds?
No. So there's a lot of data on inbreeding and male fertility in mammals and insects and plants, but very little on birds. There's a few small studies, but nothing of the scale that we're attempting here, and certainly no multi-species studies on wild populations. So this is all kind of new stuff.
I want to hear you talk about the Great Hihi Sperm Race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was that about?
So the Great Hihi Sperm Race was an awareness-raising and fundraising initiative that I ran earlier in the year. So basically, as part of my research, I go out and I collect sperm samples from males, and I video the sperm swimming around under a microscope, and I measure how fast the sperm is swimming. And so in October last year, I went around 4 different populations of hihi in the North Island, and I measured sperm swimming speed in 128 males. And one evening I was sitting around with some of my co-workers on one of our field sites on Tiri Tiri Matangi, and we said, you know, we should bet on which bird is going to have the fastest swimming sperm. And then as we talked about it, we were like, well, actually, could we make this into something much bigger? And what we ended up doing was having a website built where anyone from the general public could place bets on which bird in my study that they thought would have the fastest swimming sperm. And each bet cost $10, and all of the money went to hihi conservation. And it was one of those ideas where we weren't sure if it was just going to be a bit too weird to work, but in the end, it kind of went international. We got bets in from 17 different countries, and we raised over $11,000, so it worked really well.
How did you market that internationally? Or really at all? How did you get that out?
So I actually have a background in public relations. That's what I used to do before I went back into science. And so I put together a press kit with a press release and things like that and sent it out to New Zealand media. And we also did an awful lot of work on social media as well. And it was through social media, through Twitter specifically, that it mainly got picked up and then passed on to international journalists. There was one particular guy who writes for the BBC, for their world news pages online. He picked it up and ran with the story, and I think that got out to a much wider audience, and then all of a sudden we were seeing news articles in Taiwan and France and Germany, and it was all over the place, which is super exciting.
Cool. Were you surprised when all of that was happening?
Yeah, I mean, I knew that it was possible, that it was one of those ideas, because it was quite odd that it could kind of go a bit viral, but I never expected the kind of success. You know, when people said, well, how much do you think you're going to raise? And I was like, well, about 128 birds, if each bird gets one bet on it, that's $1,280. That would be nice, you know? Mm-hmm. I never thought we would break $10,000, let alone $11,000. So that was incredible.
When you were betting on birds, what kind of factors were you thinking about in terms of what birds you thought would be the fastest sperm?
So I didn't bet on any birds because I knew the answer.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have been allowed.
That's
However,
fair.
The kind of thing we'd be looking for, what we would expect to see, and the kind of hypothesis for what we're doing here in my study is that birds with higher genetic diversity would have better quality sperm. And so we'd expect, so hihi, for example, they were used to be all over the North Island, and then they got reduced to just one population on Hauturu, on Little Barrier. So that's the source population from which all other populations of hihi have been founded.
Oh,
so you might expect that Hauturu would have the highest genetic diversity of any hihi population, and that your fastest swimming sperm bird would be in that population. So that was one way to look at it. But because you're looking at it on an individual level rather than average level, it didn't actually work out like that. Mm-hmm. And the bird with the fastest sperm actually came from Tiri Tiri Mantangi, which is one of our translocated populations.
So when people were betting, were they able to see some kind of genetic profile for each bird?
No, because we didn't have it. So we've only literally just got the genetic data through these birds. So what we did was we told them what population they came from, because some people, you know, like people who volunteered in certain sites, that population is just really special to them, so they just wanted to bet on the birds from there or whatever. But we also put up a little fun descriptor of each bird, although that was in no way, they were very jokey descriptors, they were in no way related to, you know, how whether we thought the bird would do well or not. It was all completely random. So it's kind of a bit of a lottery, really.
What is the ultimate goal of this research? How is what you're researching potentially useful for conservation?
So we have a fair number of problems with hatching success in birds in New Zealand. A lot of species of birds in New Zealand have been reduced down to very small numbers. And when we see issues with hatching success, it's not always clear whether that's to do with poor male fertility or developmental problems in the embryo or poor parenting. And so starting to pick that apart by asking in the first instance, well, can inbreeding cause poor male fertility in birds? That's the first step, sort of answering that question of why we have these issues with hatching success. So the first point of my research is to find out whether it does cause poor male fertility in birds, because it might not. And if it doesn't, fantastic, we can move on and answer the next question. But if it does, can we start to integrate that knowledge into conservation management and the way we translocate birds and move them around when we're thinking about founding new populations? You know, how should we best do that? So that's kind of the aim of what we're looking to do. Mm.
Does inbreeding affect female reproduction in any way?
So there's been way less work done on that, which is really interesting to me. And I think one of the reasons people don't study female fertility as much is because it's just much harder to get at. So, you know, like we can take semen samples, we can look at sperm, but for most species, you know, that are internally fertilizing, you know, it's really hard to get at egg quality and things like that without having to euthanize the female, which, you know, we don't want to do when we're working with certain species. So I think it's just a much trickier question to get at. Okay, well, in birds, we assume that if a female is laying an egg, then she's fertile because she's made an egg. But is it a good egg? Is it a bad egg? Like, how do we tell the difference? If she's having issues, is that going to affect the quality of the egg? And there's just not a lot of work been done in that area at all.
That was The Green Disc on 95 BFM. Tihe Modi Ora.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.